Hi there, I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor podcast. On today's show, my guest is nine-time number one New York Times bestselling author and an internationally recognized leader, speaker, educator, and advocate for functional medicine, Dr. Mark Hyman. And we're talking about fats, functional medicine, and his new book, Eat Fat, Get Thin. Dr. Mark Hyman is a practicing family physician and the director of the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine. He's also the founder and medical director of the Ultra Wellness Center, chairman of the board of the Institute for Functional Medicine, and medical director of the Huffington Post, and was a regular medical contributor on many TV shows, including CNN, The View, and The Dr. Oz Show. Dr. Hyman has also testified before the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine, and the Senate Working Group on Healthcare Reform on Functional Medicine. He is winner of the Linus Pauling Award and was inducted into the Books for Better Life Hall of Fame. On today's show, we talk about the shift in diet trends from low fat to what we have now, and how this is really impacting the health of Americans. Dr. Hyman also shares why Eat Fat, Get Thin was the hardest book he's ever written. And we talk about what we should be eating, including what a typical healthy plate looks like. So please enjoy this interview with Dr. Hyman. Dr. Hyman, it's so great to have you on my podcast.
Well, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we are in a big fat mess, aren't we? How did we get into this big fat mess?
Well, you know, we are in a big fat mess, which is one in two Americans are sick with a chronic disease. One in two have prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, 70% overweight, 40% of kids are overweight. What happened? Like, this all exploded since 1980. And what happened was that we got on a diet path that was based on really bad science, but ended up causing this huge problem, which is that we thought that fat was bad, that fat made you fat, that fat caused heart disease, so we should all eat low fat. The government said it. We were told in the food pyramid from 1992 to eat 6 to 11 servings of bread, rice, cereal, and pasta a day. I mean, can you imagine 11 servings of bread as a healthy diet? And second, the food industry jumped on board and they create all these low-fat products like Snackwell cookies. So, you know, maybe eating a diet lower in fat isn't terrible, but when you actually add on the starch and the carbs, that's terrible. And that drives insulin, it drives belly fat, it drives all the diseases of chronic aging. So we got in this whole mess because some bad science had told us that fat was bad. There was some population studies that were really not well done. And I review all that in the book, Eat Fat, Get Thin. And then there was the government policy. Then the other associations like the American Diabetic Association, American Heart Association, American Nutrition and Dietetic Association, they all jumped on board because it was all a math problem. Like, fat is more calories and carbs and protein. So if you eat less fat, you lose weight. But metabolism is not a math problem. It's a hormonal problem. So we got in this mess and it's just accelerated. And finally, it's changing, right? So finally, we're actually waking up and realizing that, oops, we got it wrong, and that the real culprit was not fat, it was sugar and refined carbs. And the government, in fact, finally said that. In the 2015 dietary guidelines, they were like, hey, you know what? We kind of got it wrong. After 35 years of telling you eat less fat, we're removing any restriction on total fat in the diet. And guess what? We're also removing any restriction on cholesterol because we got that wrong too. We thought that it was actually a problem with heart disease, but we realized it's not. And that you actually don't have to worry about it, which is quite funny, given all the hullabaloo about dietary cholesterol and egg white omelets. But we should reduce sugar in our diet to less than 10% of our calories, which still seems like a lot, but it's a lot less than Americans are eating. I mean, that's about 5 or 6 teaspoons of sugar a day. The average American's having 22 teaspoons of sugar a day. Some kids are having 34. So this is all moving in the right direction, but it's still hard for people to get their head around the fact that how can fat not make me fat? Because it looks like the fat on my body. It's the same word. It's got more calories. It's all about calories in, calories out. But that whole story is just a myth.
Yeah, and I certainly remember it so well in the 80s, being in college and everything low fat, no fat. And I remember those Snackwell cookies well. I love those cookies. And I thought, oh, this is like a healthy indulgence. We can eat as much as we want of these because it doesn't have fat. But then I started to learn about how they were replacing
fat with sugar. And so anything that said low fat had twice the amount of sugar. So that's when we first started to realize this, maybe this isn't the best thing. And then there was just this complete transition to, wow, fats are actually good for us, which is so amazing that we could go from one extreme to the other. I mean, did you see this as a gradual thing or a drastic?
Well, I wrote a book in 2003 and I wrote a section there called Fat's Not a Four-Letter Word. Because we all were at that era still, it was like almost 15, 16 years ago, we're all really worried about fat. But I realized looking at the literature even then, it was clear that, you know, nuts and seeds were healthy, that olive oil was healthy, that avocados were healthy, that fish oil was essential. So that fats were not all bad, that trans fats were bad and saturated fat, I thought at the time was bad. Now, even around saturated fat, we're starting to shift our thinking. I mean, I'm just sort of stunned at the changes in the literature that are happening. I mean, I just saw a study, you know, it was published a couple of years ago, looking at 72 countries, I mean, 72 studies, 19 countries, 600,000 people, and they found there was no link between total or saturated fat and heart disease. Big shock. Another review of 350,000 people, 23 years, no link between saturated fat and heart disease, even, you know, in the context of a crappy diet. Now, I think saturated fats are harmful if you consume them as sweet fat, that's a donut, French fries, bread and butter, you know, ice cream, because the sugar and the starch and the fat, the bad combo. Bad combo, because that will actually... Why? Because when you eat a very low glycemic diet, you're not spiking your insulin levels. And if you eat fat in that context, you're not going to store the fat. But if you eat fat in the context of sugar and starch, your insulin levels are going to be high and everything that's in your bloodstream, including fat, is going to get stored. So it can be a problem. So yeah, it's not just a free food, add more fat to your donuts or whatever you're eating. It's not that. It's really about eating a whole foods, low glycemic, anti-inflammatory diet that includes lots of helpful fats. And that really will change your biology.
And so you just published a book, Eat Fat, Get Thin. And you said that it's the hardest book you've ever written. Why is that?
Well, because, you know, that stuff is like, you know, okay, with sugar, you know, I wrote about blood sugar solution or that's easy, right? Everybody knows sugar is bad. Nobody's arguing with me that says, you know, we should be eating more sugar or that we should eat more starch or more refined carbs. Everybody understands that that's true, right? Except maybe the soda companies, they think that it's still fine to have, you know, calories from sugar, that all calories are the same. That, I mean, we just know now that all calories are not the same. And so, when I wanted to look at fat, I was like, wow, you know, there's so much contradictory information. And even as a quote expert nutrition, I realized that I was confused. I was like, what about saturated fat? What about refined oils? Why are some Harvard scientists saying we should have more omega-6s? And why are some other ones saying we should not worry about saturated fats? And what should we be doing? Because there's so much controversy in this area. There's a few areas where there's not, right? I mean, there's really agreement that we all need omega-3 fats. There's agreement that for the most part, like I think there are a few radical outliers who suggest very low fat diets for disease prevention, but I don't think that's really been proven in the literature over the long term. And so you know, but everybody sort of agrees that we should be eating our nuts and seeds are fine, that avocados are fine, that olive oil is fine. All these have been well studied. But the other stuff like saturated fat and refined oils, there's so much controversy. So some are saying we should increase our vegetable oil consumption, right? Omega-6 vegetable oil. And others saying, no, those are inflammatory and those will create more heart disease. And others are saying, well, saturated fat's okay, eat butter. And others are saying, no, saturated fat's bad. So I really had to look at the literature and try to make up for myself what the story was. And I tried to have an agnostic point of view at the beginning because I didn't know what the answer was, reading and reading, and also combining with my own clinical experience. So I filter it through, one, reading thousands and thousands of papers over many years, but also through my own practice, seeing tens of thousands of patients over 30 years, you know what works and what doesn't work. And you see with the intervention. So I sort of have a living laboratory, and I used to prescribe very low fat, mostly vegetarian diets. And I see that those were actually not doing that great for people most of the time, that people actually didn't feel that good. I mean, I just was speaking to Jillian Michaels that when she doesn't eat fat or protein, she doesn't feel good. She feels like she's going to fall asleep in the afternoon. And I think that when you look at patients who I have now, I see people getting off 100 units of insulin. I see people reversing diabetes. I see things that I never saw before as I sort of ramp up the fat and decrease the sugar.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And certainly when I started realizing more about that low-fat diet wasn't healthy. And then I went into naturopathic medical school, and it was more about get back to nature. What is, you know, what are the whole foods? Where do we find these foods in nature? Do we find snack wells in nature? No, we don't. Do we find low-fat exactly. mayonnaise in nature? No.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Do you think a lot of this is about getting back to whole foods and nature?
Yeah. Totally. So, you know, do I worry about consuming like tons of like pumpkin seed oil? Probably. Do I worry about you overeating pumpkin seeds? No. You know, I mean, I think it's really about eating the whole foods and getting your fats from whole foods as much as possible. Olive oil is a little bit of an exception. I think that that's a fairly traditional food that's been around for centuries. It's made from olives in an unprocessed way if you have extra virgin olive oil. But most other oils, I mean, butter has been around forever, right? Lard. I mean, we've actually decreased our consumption of butter and lard as we've increased our risk of heart disease and obesity. It's kind of interesting. We've decreased our consumption of red meat, but we've increased our consumption of poultry, which is more omega-6 fats. We've really had you know, an interesting paradigm shift in terms of the diet. And I think that we need to really go back to focusing on less on ingredients and more on whole foods. And like you said, that's really the key, is eating, you know, fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, grass-fed animal foods, whole eggs. Now, you know, all those things that are traditionally things that you would recognize, right? I would say, you know, an avocado doesn't have a barcode, right? And an almond doesn't have a nutrition facts label. And an egg doesn't have an ingredient list, right? You just... It's an egg.
Yeah.
It's an almond. It's an avocado. Like, you just know, right? And that's really what we should be focusing on. And that's going to drive the most health benefits.
Okay. So number one thing is eat whole foods. And then, so then the next question is how much of each of these foods, like what kind of balance, what kind of ratio do we eat these foods in? Because I know that the, for example, paleo diet has become very popular, and some people have taken parts of that and made it sound like, you know, eat as much bacon as you want, eat as much lard as you want. And I personally have a hard time overdoing that for multiple reasons. We've got to look at our bodies as well as the environment, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah, well, the whole meat environment issue, we can talk about that in a minute. But okay. I think that the issue of proportions, how much, you know, what I focus on mostly is telling people to eat mostly vegetables. Like, by volume, most of your food should be coming from the plant world. And then other kinds of plant foods, like nuts and seeds. If you want to have some whole grains, fine. Some beans, fine. Some people do better on those, some people not. I think, you know, whole animal foods. But the way I think about it is by how your plate looks, right? So if your plate is 75% vegetables, you're doing good with a small piece of protein, a little bit of starch. It shouldn't be 75% starch with a little vegetable sprinkle on top, or 75% protein with two asparagus on your plate, right? It should be a plate that's mostly vegetables with a side of protein and a side of starch at the most. So that's really how I have people think about it. And if you focus on the quality of the food and you focus on what you're eating, you don't sort of have to worry about it. Because I don't think every day, okay, I'm going to have like 75% of this or 25% of this or this many calories. Like, I would drive myself crazy. And I think nobody wants to do that. Even if you have a tracker, it's like, even if you're the Olympic world record holder in calorie counting, it's really hard to actually have an exact knowledge of what you're doing unless you like weigh and measure every little thing. And then it's annoying, right? And the truth is, if you just focus on eating real food, you don't have to worry so much. Just include all the good foods in your diet. Just nuts and seeds, lots of vegetables, some fruit, small amounts of protein, whole eggs, fish, you know, all those things are just real food. And you don't have to really worry so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, of course, we don't want to be counting calories. We don't want to be weighing foods. But I think it is nice for people who really aren't sure about how to eat to look at a plate and say, okay, well, that's about 75% vegetables. So can you give an example of what that plate would look like? Because I think when we go out to eat these days in most restaurants, you go to a steak restaurant and half the plate is steak. And then you'll have like, you know, half of it's mashed potatoes. And then maybe they'll bring you some like cream spinach.
Yeah, yeah. When I go out, I look at the side dishes. And I'll have a salad at the beginning, let's say. If they have a nice soup, I might have that. And then I look at the side dishes. Like, do I have broccoli? Do they have like stir-fried mushrooms? Usually if you go to a good restaurant, they'll have all these sides. And if they don't, I'll just ask them, can you bring me some broccoli with some olive oil, you know, and vinegar or salt or something. And then I'll have a small piece of protein, and then I'll have all these eggs. So skip the potatoes, skip the bread, skip the noodles, skip the rice. And I just have more vegetables. So you double down on the vegetables and you ask them to do it, and they'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you just mentioned potatoes, that you skip the potatoes. Now, I know that some people think of potatoes as a vegetable.
It's
so
true.
Yeah.
So I divide vegetables into non-starchy and starchy vegetables. So non-starchy, you get unlimited amounts, right? So if you want to have 45 cups of broccoli, go ahead. Good luck, right? You're not going to be able to eat it, right? Because it's fiber. It's going to fill you up. And I do binge on vegetables, and I fill up on them because they fill me up, and they're full of fiber and they're full of vitamins and nutrients. And so you can kind of go crazy with that. Then there's the starchy veggies. Those are like sweet potatoes, potatoes, winter squash, those kinds of things, root vegetables. You have to be constantly thinking about how much of that you're eating, because if you're eating a lot of starchy vegetables, those can turn into sugar in your body. So that's why I just pay attention. So not that you can't have them, it's just how much. So yeah. It's like usually a small portion, like half a cup.
Okay. Great. So that definitely gives us some ideas on how to balance your plate. And really, it sounds pretty intuitive what you're talking about, as long as you're getting back to nature. I know, though, that some people get really obsessed with food and measuring. And what do you think about when people, I mean, sometimes it's called orthorexia, or people are called health freaks. Or what, sure. What do you think about that? Because I think that, you know, there are people that follow you and follow me that are a little bit obsessed with this. So how can we have a healthy balance and relationship with food?
I think it's really an important question, Trevor, because we have a lot of relationships with food, right? It's not just about the quality of our diet. It's just not just about health. It's about pleasure. It's about community. It's about tradition. It's about culture. It's about connectivity. It's about all the things that matter in life. So food is where all that comes together. And if you're obsessed with your diet in a way that's making you kind of crazy or making the people around you crazy, that's not a good thing. And really what I want people to find is freedom. You know, freedom in food, where you don't have to be obsessed. You can eat the right foods and then you don't have to worry about it. Do I ever eat anything with trans fat? Absolutely not. Do I ever eat anything with high fructose corn syrup? Absolutely not. I'm obsessed about that because those things are toxic and I don't want to consume them at all. And I think they contribute to disease and they make me feel bad, right? But do I occasionally have like a cookie? Yeah. You know, if it's made from real ingredients, fine. You know, if I'm not sensitive to gluten, I don't worry about it. So do I occasionally have ice cream in the summer? Yeah. Do I think dairy is a staple in my diet? Absolutely not. I think there's a lot of reasons to have a problem with it. Do I get some symptoms? I do. I get like a runny nose. I get some digestive issues, but ice cream's worth it once in a while. So I go for it. It's like life's short. So I don't make myself crazy about it, but I really say 90, 95% of the time, I'm eating foods that I know support my health, that taste good. And it's really about pleasure for me. Like when you lose pleasure in your food, then you're in trouble. And the beautiful thing about fat is that's where the pleasure comes from. You know, that's what makes food taste good. When you take the fat out, you have to add sugar. Otherwise, it tastes like cardboard, right? So that's what's so beautiful about adding fat back in your diet. It just makes things delicious and luscious and satisfying. And people eat less. You know, I think, I'm going to eat more fat and then I'm going to have more calories and that's going to make me gain weight. Well, it's actually not how the body works. When you actually eat fat, you shut off your hunger switch, so you don't want to eat as much. When you eat fat, you speed up your metabolism, not slow it down. When you eat fat, you actually simulate fat burning and that you naturally will regulate your body. I mean, I saw a study, it was interesting when I was researching the book, where they looked at kids and they gave them a fatty snack or they gave them like chips, like, you know, like potato stuff. And the kids who, and they thought, oh, they're going to eat less, more calories if they had the fatty snack, like it was cheese or something. And it turned out the kids who ate the cheese were more satisfied, didn't eat as much, as opposed to the kids who were eating the chips were hungry, and it stimulated addictive behavior and they ate more. So you end up eating less and you're not hungry and you don't want to snack and you're not craving all kinds of stuff. I mean, we did a program with 1,000 people when we launched the book to see how the program would work. I want to see. And, I've done this with my patients. I've done a similar programs. And what was striking to me is we took a survey, like 80% of people at the beginning of the program had cravings all the time or most of the time. At the end, only 1% had cravings. 1%. I'm like, wow, that's unbelievable. It literally turns off the brain. And I can't tell you how many people have said to me, it's just unbelievable. I'm never hungry. I'm not thinking about food. I'm not obsessing about it. I'm not craving sugar. I don't want it. And it's true. Like I go by, like I don't deprive myself. If I want something, I'm going to get it, right? So I walk by Starbucks and I go in there like, and I see all those things in the case with the muffins and the, they don't even look appealing to me at all. I used to like them, but now I don't. And I feel so much better. And my body composition has changed. I mean, I'm an old guy. I'm like 56 and my body composition is like 1 pound of body fat in my viscera, which is like so low. I just had a body composition. I mean, I'm below that. Like you look at the body fat, I'm like below, way below average. And that's really unusual for a guy my age. And it's only because I've actually moved towards more of this eating that I've noticed that what I thought was aging, I was getting love handles, a little belly fat. I was like, oh, you know, so I exercise wasn't working. So some people are, you know, carb intolerant, just like other people are gluten intolerant. It means when they eat carbs, their body reacts in a very bad way. It spikes insulin more than the average person. So if I eat like a bagel, my insulin might go like this. If someone who's carb intolerant, it might go like this. And that creates this huge metabolic domino effect, which causes them to store more belly fat, makes them hungrier, slows their metabolism, like everything you don't want to happen happens. So I actually have a quiz in Eat Fat, Get Thin is how do you know if you're carbohydrate intolerant? Well, there's a lot of things you can figure out. Do you have extra belly fat? Are you hungry all the time and craving sugar? Do you have high triglycerides, low HDL? Have you had a family history of diabetes? And there's a whole series of questions that I go through for people to actually figure it out. And those people, you know, might need less. They might. And by the way, when I say carbs, I mean starchy carbs, right? Bread, rice, cereal, pasta, sugar of all kinds, right? But the truth is that most of my diet is carbs. Most of my diet is carbs by volume, right? So vegetables, guess what? Broccoli is a carb. Asparagus is a carb. Tomatoes are a carb. Radishes are a carb, right? Those are all carbs. So that's what I eat mostly, but they're phytochemical rich. They're anti-inflammatory. They're nutrient dense. They're full of vitamins and minerals. They have tons of fiber and they're really great for you, right? So that's different than the other kind of carbs. So I think when I say carbs, and by the way, most of your diet by volume should be carbs and vegetables, but by calories, it's probably mostly fat, like 50% or more fat. And that's surprising for people because, you know, you don't think fat's so bad, but actually when you do the math, and you look at, you know, listen, a few tablespoons of olive oil has more calories than probably 12 cups of broccoli, right? So you can eat 12 cups of broccoli or you can have a tablespoon of olive. So you really, by calories, the fat has much, by volume, the calories have much more, the fat has much more calories, you know, than the carbs do by volume. So by calories, most of your diet is fat. By volume, most of it is non-starchy carbs like vegetables.
Okay. Do you lay out like specific measurements of those foods, exactly how many servings and?
Yeah. Yeah. In the book, I have a 21-day plan. I go through basically some guidelines, right? It's not rigid, but it's like people can be flexible within that. And I talk about, you know, make sure you have at least, you know, 75% of your plate or 50% of your plate is veggies. Have a 4-ounce piece of protein size of your palm. If you want, it can be vegetable or animal protein. You know, add 3, 4, 5 servings of fat, which is olive oil, avocados, nuts and seeds to your diet every day. And that's basically it. You know, there's some really simple principles that people follow and they can do great.
How much oil is a serving?
Serving a tablespoon of oil.
A tablespoon. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. And then what about fruit?
Fruit's fine. I think if you eat a whole fruit, if you have fruit juice, it's not good, right? And I tend to go with the lower glycemic fruits. So berries, apples, pears, if you're having a lot of melon or pineapple, you know, that can get into trouble if you have sugar issues. I've seen people who have plums and, you know, if you have diabetes or you're really sort of on the edge. So the key is how do you become metabolically resilient, right? How do you become more and more resilient so you get to eat more flexibly, right? And you have to do that by getting more fit, by eating better, and then you can kind of have more wiggle room. But if you are severely diabetic and you just look at a piece of fruit, your blood sugar goes up. I see this happen. So you have to be careful depending on what your condition is. So if I have someone who's type 2 diabetic and I'm trying to reverse their diabetes, I might be careful with the volume of fruit they eat.
Okay. And with fats, people often ask, what about cooking? Like which fat, which oils you cook with, which are not okay to cook with? And that seems to be always changing.
Yeah. Well, the key here is, you know, you want to be careful with fats because when you heat them, they can become damaged and then they become very harmful to the body. Any kind of fat, whether it's butter or olive oil or any kind of fat. Now, some fats have higher smoke points, so you can cook at higher temperatures. Others don't. So for example, olive oil has a lower smoke point, so you can saute in at low temperatures, that's fine. If you have deep frying, always bad, always bad. Think of deep, when I'm saying fat, I don't mean deep fried stuff, because deep fried stuff is usually made with omega-6 oils, which are very unstable. And when you heat them, they become quite toxic. So it'll be like typical vegetable oils. And that's what's being used in most fried foods now. And then you know, the most staples are coconut oil is actually very stable at high temperatures. And a little bit of butter and not too high temperatures. You don't want smoking. Those are all fine to use.
Okay. What about avocado oil?
Avocado oil is great. I use avocado oil. Sometimes I'll use different flavored oils like walnut oil or macadamia oil. You can use there's a lot of different kinds of oils you can use. But I stick mostly with extra virgin olive oil and my coconut oil and a little bit of butter. Those are my main cooking fats. And sometimes I'll use like sesame oil if I want to cook Chinese food or something in small amounts.
Yeah, sesame is nice. Okay, great. So I want to get us back to the environmental issues around eating meat. So you said let's get back to that in a moment. So how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, when I really, again, like why this was hard to book to write was because there's so many controversial issues, right? Fat is controversial. And then meat is super controversial. You've got vegans saying, you know, if you don't be a vegan, you're going to die. And the others are vegan, you're going to be sick all the time and malnourished, and you should eat more meat and be more paleo and not have grains and beans because they're inflammatory. And like, where do you go with all that? So I said, I better really look at this meat issue in detail. So I kind of realized there were really three main issues with meat. One was moral, one was environmental, and one was health. So I kind of think they often get conflated together and kind of mixed up, but let's just sort of separate them out. If you're a Buddhist monk, and I have Buddhist monks as my patients, and they don't want to eat meat, I don't force them to eat. I have diabetics, so I've been able to reverse the diabetes using a higher fat, plant-based diet. Totally doable. To be more vigilant, but you can do it. Environmental, big issue. Standard factory farming of animals in this country and around the world is one of the biggest contributors to environmental degradation. It affects climate change. It depletes our soils. It affects our water. And the aquifers contaminated with runoff from pesticides and fertilizers. It depletes our aquifers because we're using all this fresh water to irrigate the land. I mean, there's just so many environmental issues. And I think the use of antibiotics, use of GMOs, there's a whole can of worms. So I think factory farming of animals is coming to an end, I hope, in this country as we start to get smarter about it and we start to regulate things like antibiotics, as we start to pay attention to GMOs. I think people are going to get smarter issues. And assuming we can eat traditional meats or grass-fed meats or things that are healthier, what about health issues? Because you've got a whole group saying that meat seems to cause cancer, doesn't cause any of those things. And you see, if you look at the literature, it's studies on both sides. And I was like, well, what actually is going on in studies? And it occurred to me like that I should look at the populations that were eating the meat in the study that showed it was a problem. And you know what? If people ate meat, they weren't paying attention to their health because meat was thought to be bad. So if you ate meat, you didn't give a crap about your health. And guess what? That was true for these people. They ate more food. They had 800 more calories a day they ate. They exercised less. They drank more. They smoked more. They didn't eat fruits and vegetables. They didn't take vitamins. Of course, they had more heart disease and more diabetes, right? But if you look at, there was studies that showed, for example, meat eaters and vegetarians who shopped at health food stores. So what if you ate meat in the context of a whole foods diet? Of a plant-based diet with some meat in it, a little bit of a condiment or as a side dish. Well, there was a study that looked at that. There was 11,000 people, and they looked at these people for a long period of time. They found that the death rates were cut in half in the meat eaters who shopped at health food stores, and the vegetarians also had their death rate cut in half. So yes, you know, if you're eating meat in the context of an overall healthy diet, I'm not worried about it. And when you look at some of the other issues around colon cancer and things, the big World Health Organization came out and said, oh, you know, don't eat meat because it's causing cancer. Well, they said only for processed meat. Nobody agreed in the World Health Organization, in the science group that actually looked at this, that red meat was a problem or that unprocessed red meat was a problem. What they found was that processed meat, bacon, hot dogs, ham, you know, deli meats, sausages. And what they found was there was an increase in colon cancer. I think it's probably real. And what did they find? They found that your risk went up from 5% to 6%. Okay. So let's see. If you ate bacon a day, which is a fair bit, if you ate that every day,
how much bacon?
Like 50 grams.
Okay.
Which is like, you know, a serving, maybe a serving. Right? If you, it's a good source of protein. It's a good amount of protein. You want 30 grams or 40 grams of protein with each meal. 50 grams is like a good serving of bacon, right? If you do that every day for your whole life, 18%. Well, from 5 to 6 is an 18% increase. So it sounds good when you say 18, but it's actually a 1% absolute increase. So is giving up bacon once in a while worth it to reduce your risk 1% over your lifetime? That's up to you. But I think it, if it is a risk.
So basically,
so at the end of the day, I say, if you consume meat and animal foods, make sure they're whole foods, make sure they're sustainably raised, make sure they're organic, make sure there's no antibiotics and GMOs. It's more expensive, yes, but you can eat less and that's okay.
Okay. And so I think with the processed foods, the processed meats you're talking about, they generally contain nitrates, right?
They contain nitrates, yeah. Nitrates, yeah. And even naturally smoked things like contain nitrates from natural substances. That might be the factor. It might be something.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's kind of hard to know which necessarily is the factor, but it doesn't sound like it increases our risk that much, first of all. And then second of all, it's about moderation. I think mm-hmm. we just don't want to overdo it with anything, including, you know, meat.
Yeah. Would I have a 16-ounce steak every meal? No. Do I think it's okay to have 4 ounces or 6 ounces of protein a day? Fine. I mean, do I think it's probably bad for the environment to do it in the way we're doing it? Absolutely. Can you use other forms of protein? Sure. You know, you want to use nuts and seeds. I mean, most of my protein comes from nuts and seeds and from, you know, fish and things like sardines, small fish, small shrimp. So I think those are where I get most of it. I'd say I might eat red meat once every few weeks. And I might have lamb more, chicken occasionally, but really sort of try to eat more eggs. And you can just eat really simple whole foods.
Okay. So with your 21-day eat fat, get thin plan, tell us a bit more about that. So how do you lay it out? How is it helping people? Give us some more information on that.
Well, you know, people need a structure, right? They need what do I do? Because people are so confused. Like, what the heck do I eat? So I laid out very clearly the principles. And then I gave them, as we talked about, what the foods they should eat are. And then I actually gave them a few other tips, basically around exercise, stress reduction, sleep, and a few supplements. And that's basically the plan. And then there's a menu planner, there's a recipe guide, there's great recipes in the book. And it's really about choosing foods that are simple and easy to do for yourself. And I, you can follow the recipes or not, but I basically laid out the principles of simple cooking techniques because people have to learn how to cook. And it doesn't have to take a long time, right? So if you have a body, you kind of have to know how to take care of that, right? If you have a dog, you have to know how to take care of it. And when you have your own body, most of us have abdicated that role. And so cooking is a basic life skill. And it doesn't have to be fancy. You have to be a chef, but you should know how to chop vegetables. You should know how to make some simple food for yourself. And in the book, I go through these simple cooking techniques because people need to know. And it's really the thing that can liberate you because we're all trained that it's too difficult, takes too much time, that eating real food is too expensive. And none of that's true. And when you look at the literature on this, it just doesn't stand up. You can eat well for less. You can cook and eat meals in less time than it takes to go out to McDonald's or eat convenience food.
I'm so glad you're saying that because I get so tired of hearing that from other moms that, oh, well, you shop at Whole Foods or a health food store. I can't afford that. Or I don't have time for that. So I'm just going to run mm-hmm. by and get fast food. I never take my kids to get mm-hmm. fast food. That's mm-hmm. just not even an option. It's not even just even in my head at all yeah. as an idea. And I've got certain meals that I know I can put whip together really quickly. But so what are some things that you can recommend to people to get us back to making our own food? Because even if you eat out at so-called healthy restaurants, mm-hmm. it's still not the same. Being able to make whole foods at home and just having it be simple and easy.
So true. I think, you know, people have to get over the fear factor. And, you know, there's great little cooking videos online you can watch. I mean, there's cooking classes you can take, but it's really a simple skill. You know, I went to this place in South Carolina as part of the movie Fed Up that I was in, and it was pretty interesting. I went to this family that was very overweight, very sick. They lived in a trailer on food stamps and disability. They never cooked a meal in their life, not one. Everything was from a box, package, or can. They didn't know how to stir fry a vegetable. They didn't know how to chop an onion. They didn't know how to peel garlic. They didn't know anything, right? So I went through a trail. I said, look at what you're eating. This is what's causing the problem. They wanted to get healthy. They just didn't know. They were having Cool Whip because it had zero trans fats in it. But it was full of trans fats, right? But this is marketing nonsense from the company that allows them to say that. They were eating, you know, processed salad dressing, which is full of sugar. They're having Skippy peanut butter because they thought it was healthy, but it was full of trans fats and high fructose corn syrup. They were eating, you know, like Diet Mountain Dew and Cheez-Its because they were baked and not fried and all kinds of stuff that was factory foods. And I said, look, why don't we just, like, I'm not going to tell you what to do. Why don't we just make a meal together? I'm going to go get some groceries. Let's make some turkey chili, a salad, olive oil and vinegar. We'll roast some sweet potatoes, put some spice on them. They will stir fry some asparagus, simple food. And I brought a guide called Good Food on a Tight Budget, which is from the Environmental Working Group where I'm on the board, which is how to eat food that's good for you, good for your planet, good for your wallet. They live in one of the worst food deserts in America. I showed them how to cook one meal. They were unbelievably blown away about how delicious it was, how simple it was. And also we did it together. So it was fun. We all enjoyed it. We cooked, we talked, we hung out. It was a social connection. And I said, look, you guys can do this. When I left, I'm like, you guys can do this. And they did it. And there was five of them on food stamps disability. And when the worst food desert in America, they were able to do it. They figured out how to get vegetables, some simple food, cheaper cuts of this and that. Maybe it wasn't all organic. Maybe it wasn't all grass-fed, but it was real food. And they lost 200 pounds. They felt amazing. They were empowered. It wasn't that hard. So it just kind of occurred to me that really the issue is really that we have really not trained our citizens to actually eat real food and cook for themselves. That we've by the food industry to outsource their cooking to corporations. And that's got to stop.
Yeah, it does have to stop. And I think what happened is that, you know, when people started working more and the convenience of the marketing of food companies is like, oh, it's so easy. All you have to do is open the can, open the box, and then, you know, bam, you've got dinner for your family. Make it easy for yourself. You'll go spend time doing other more important things. And now we're trying to teach people like what's really important is family time in the kitchen and making meals together, and eating whole foods. I mean, this is how I grew up. I grew up on a farm in Virginia, and my parents would, you know, we pick the, you know, get the eggs, and we go and get all the produce from our garden, and we'd sit down together and we'd eat. And that's what I grew up with. I didn't know any other way. And then, so I'm so surprised to see our country just so used to this way of living.
Well, it's actually was intentional, right? If you look at the research on this, it's pretty scary. The food companies got together and they're like, we're going to get rid of the American home cooking. We're going to create convenience as the value. We're going to hire Betty Crocker to invent Betty Crocker to basically create this cookbook where they include all these processed foods. And then slowly, slowly it subverted the American kitchen. And they actually got rid of home economics in school. I mean, this is not an accident. So all these basic things that we all sort of took for granted are now, you know, we have to bring back.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Okay. And I think that for everyone that's listening, watching, if there's one thing you take away from that, it's how do you get back to home cooked, wholesome, whole meals, and anything that you can do to start moving that direction or to keep supporting your family and doing that. I think that's, when you say that's one of the biggest takeaways from this.
Absolutely. And just, you know, don't be afraid of eating real food. I mean, if it has a health claim, it's probably bad for you. If it says low fat, it's probably bad for you. If it says gluten-free, it's probably bad for you, right? If it says, you know, low sugar, there's probably something else in there that's not good for you. So I'd be super careful about anything that has a health claim on the label and just eat real food. Just say, you know, does this have a barcode on it? Does an avocado really need to have an ingredient list? No. Like, these are just foods, right? So that's what I would focus on. And if you just fill your fridge up with foods, okay, you can have a can something sometimes, right? If it's a can of sardines or, you know, then you know the ingredient, a can of tomatoes, it's water, tomatoes, and salt, right? That's fine. It's just more understanding the processed food that you're eating that shouldn't be there.
Absolutely. Great. So I know that you have a Q&A video on fat that you're going to share with us, because I know people still, even after watching, listening to this, they are going to have questions about fat. And so you have that. We're going to share that link. Is there anything you want?
Yeah, I've got eatfatgetthin.com is a 45-minute Q&A. I also have an online challenge to do with Eat Fat Get Thin where thousands of people join together and do the program. It's just awesome. And you get the community support. I do Q&As there. I do all sorts of support. So it's really fun.
Okay, great. Well, Dr. Hyman, thank you so much for everything you're doing to spread these important messages, get this information out to people. Really appreciate all the work that you're doing. And thanks for the interview.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Dr. Mark Hyman. To learn more about Dr. Hyman, his new book, and the Q&A video about fat that he mentioned, just visit my website, thespadoctor.com, go to the podcast page with his interview, and you'll find all the information and links there. And while you're there, I invite you to join the Spa Doctor community on my website or subscribe to the Spa Doctor podcast on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. If you haven't done so already, I highly recommend that you get your customized skin profile at theskinquiz.com. It's free and based upon the answers to just a few questions, you'll get your own customized skin report. It's theskinquiz.com. Also, don't miss out on the latest tips for glowing skin and vibrant health. Join us on Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, and Instagram. Join the conversation. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.